This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We open up this hour by going to the Progressive Guest Line. Talk to Dave Preston, WTOP. Progressive Insurance for a job you'll love. Visit progressive.com/careers. We got the Washington Commanders in action tonight. The Baltimore Orioles have now got their opponent for the ALDS. And oh, by the way, it's James Bond Day, and I can't think of a better person to have on than you, Dave, to talk about James Bond Day.
So, you know, I have met one of the actors.
Well, go ahead, yeah.
You know, I have met one of the actors who's played 007. So, you know, it's
George
a special
Lazenby.
Day. Yeah, exactly. It's like that's the beauty. It's like, hey, yeah, I met him, but it's the Aussie guy who did just one. It's a fantastic week, and it's an exciting evening at FedEx Field, the first primetime event with the new ownership in place. They are the Burgundy and Gold is the nickname of the team outside of the team name. They're wearing all black this evening. It's still there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm at the game. They're taking on a hapless Bears squad.
I can't think of a weirder way to start a schedule on perception of your opponents than Washington. They opened up with wins against two teams that might be going for the number one pick in the draft in Arizona and Denver. And then they follow that with two games of two teams that could meet in Super Bowl 58 in Buffalo and Philadelphia. Overall, is there a way to read this team based on the outcomes of those four games against those four extreme opponents?
And you're spot on, Tony, because yes, they're better than Arizona and Denver, and yes, they're not as good as Philadelphia and Buffalo. You could make the case for 20 teams to be able to say exactly the same thing.
Right.
I think what a lot of us have liked about this team so far has been the play of Sam Howell. He looks the part. He acts the part. He's been able to lead them on in two-minute drives the last couple of weeks. This past Sunday, let him down the field to get a game tying touchdown against Philadelphia. I think people like the play calling of Eric Bieniemy. I look at the first 2 weeks where they ran the two-minute drill very effectively down the stretch to put points on the board before intermission and get momentum going into halftime. That momentum did not happen against the Bills as Howell wound up getting picked off, and they actually lost momentum going into halftime by allowing a late drive to the Eagles. Those are all causes for confidence. I think causes for concern, the fact that Howell can't stay upright, the 24 sacks allowed, the most in the NFL. Also the defense, that has been the bedrock of this team since Ron Rivera came on board and Jack Del Rio coordinating things. The defense hasn't been awesome. They're allowing 30 points per game. Now, you're going to allow points against a Buffalo, against a Philadelphia this past Sunday, but 33 points to a Denver team that isn't that good. So we've got the next 4 weeks, I think, are going to tell us a lot more about this team than the previous four did as far as how good or how bad are they a pretender, are they a contender.
You touched on something at the beginning when you said this is the first primetime game in the post-Daniel Snyder era. What has that weight of him being off of this team? It's a short sample size, but in the few weeks that you've seen the way this team and the fan base has reacted to the season, is it different? Are we making a lot of that, or is there a real feeling like there is a new era here, even if it's not something we can tangibly see?
Completely different era, like night and day, like they from down to the brass washing down concrete at the stadium for the first time in 15 years to make things look different. I think years ago, one of the mayors of New York decided to do the broken window format, or it was something they wanted to keep the windows from getting broken, and that gave people a sense of pride that they normally wouldn't have. And I think also not having to deal with, whatever new shenanigans, Dan Snyder might be pulling, whether it's on the field, meddling with the team, whether it's, delivering stale pretzels and, flat beer and bad concessions, or, off the, in the office, shenanigans as far as, harassment and being inappropriate and having to go before Congress. So it's a completely different world. I didn't think it would be this drastic of a change. But people who have always loved this team have always, this team has always been number one in their heart, no matter how well the Caps, how well the Nats, how well the Washington Castles World Team Tennis team does. This has been their team, and they are pumped to be able to really get out there and support their club again.
Go back to the Philadelphia game. I know Ron Rivera said there's no moral victories, and there aren't. I get it. But at the same time, was there takeaways from that that go, all right, you know what? There are building blocks here.
I think a little good, a little bad. I think there's the being bummed out that, you know what, you had a chance to win at Philadelphia. Granted, they won up there last year on Monday night. But you don't often have opportunities to steal one from a team as good as Philadelphia. And whether it was by, you know, calling the defense in overtime that allowed a completion to put the Eagles into field goal range, or not going for two, and, you know, the Riverboat Ron living up to his name. I think that even though everyone's happy that they played well, they didn't get blown out after getting boat raced and demolished by Buffalo the week before, they left something on the table. So there's that, but there's also the, you know what, for years, this team has been getting punked by the rest of the division, and to show well on the road the way they did to take the Eagles to overtime, that's something.
All right, let's go to the Baltimore Orioles. All right, so now we're going to move to baseball, and I got to admit, I hardly know anything about this team, I tell you. I mean, outside of Rutschman, who I saw at the All-Star game,
right?
How did this come? Where did this come from? How were they building this? Because the AL East is a great division, and yet they won it. They won it when a team exploded from the start. They hung with that team and took advantage of their shortcomings. How did the Orioles pull this off and win this and become a team now people are focusing on?
I think this is going to be the textbook for how to rebuild, because just a few years ago, they were losing 110 games.
Yeah.
But when you lose and when you crater like some franchises do, we're dealing that with the Washington Nationals right now, you have the opportunity to stock up on prospects. You have the opportunity to trade for younger guys, to draft well. That's no guarantee, because we've seen teams draft poorly despite having great selections. But they were able to build a young nucleus. Gunnar Henderson is 22 years old. He is awesome. Rutschman, you mentioned, is 25. He's a fantastic player. They've got younger, Ryan Mountcastle might just be a Dave Kingman for the 21st century, but you know what? Kingman ball is good. And so, you know, he's 25. Anthony Santander is under 30. Aaron Hicks is 28. So they have a group of young guys who all got to the big leagues at the same time, are all peaking at that same time. They're still on the upswing. Some of these guys, this is their ceiling season, but you have to feel that there are better years down the road for a few of these guys, and everybody got good at the same time. It's also, you can't diminish the fact that there's a balanced schedule this year. You play everybody, so you're not playing 76 games against the AL East, 19 games against the Yankees, against the Red Sox, against the Rays. It's 13, but you know what? Those six games, six times four, that's 24 other games where you're playing a team that doesn't know every little crevice about you.
Pitching. How good is this pitching staff? Kyle Bradish, John Means, Dean Kramer. Yep. How good is this pitching?
I think it's good enough. I think it's good enough to win at least one series. You know, seventh in the majors in ERA, eighth in quality starts. We've touched a little bit about the lineup. Texas comes in red hot. They're second in the majors in hitting and third in runs scored. So the rotation and bullpen will be tested. And one of my concerns during the season, as they got to August, is that you have a lot of guys who haven't been in this place. And when you've never been somewhere before, you don't know how they're going to react. You don't know how they're going to play when the innings are bigger, when the pitchers are bigger, when the at-bats are bigger. I think we're going to learn a lot about this team the first two games on how well they handle what is an elevated stage.
You mentioned how you build a team. Was this a surprise? I mean, 101 wins, forget that. I mean, just the fact that they're here, was this surprising?
I thought they'd be better. I thought they'd win maybe 85 to 90 games. I didn't think they'd win 101 games. I mean, a lot of it was also, contributing factors include, the Yankees and Red Sox both, underperforming this season. So the O's were able to pick up wins and scrape wins here and there. My favorite Orioles stat is that they haven't been swept since May of 2022. That means that, you know, and you make the playoffs when you don't get – swept. You know, that obviously, and that's. But it's amazing how this team hasn't fallen to pressures where they've had just a stretch of bad games. I would have thought that with a young team like this, they'd have a stretch where they'd lose 5-10 games in a row. The fact that they haven't been swept, is very, that gives you cause for hope that this might be an incredible October for these O's.
All right, I got a minute, but I had to ask you about James Bond Day. I was going to ask you about your Taylor Swift football CD, but I have to ask you this. If I've got a young kid and I say, here's James Bond, here's all these movies, do you start with Dr. No, or can you go... if you really want to hook them, what's the movie to start somebody on their first James Bond film?
Goldfinger or The Spy Who Loved Me. Those two have all the trimmings, and that will get them back for the less gaudy, the less quote-unquote entertaining movies.
All right, now, give me a quick Taylor Swift, He's My Chief CD track listing.
Okay, false start, called for holding. He's pushing off, a legal procedure of the heart. Dropping back and looking deep, calling a pick play. The somber ballad, I called a post, he ran a slant. Scorigami is an instrumental. Then there's the honky-tonk B-side. Always take the underdog at home in prime time.
It is Travis Kelce's birthday today, so that's awesome.
Yes.
I'm expecting a tune. I'm expecting some sort of lyrical tune that the WTOP people will put a video together for you.
Oh, I can only dream.
Always good talking to you, Dave. A very busy time in the D.C. area. Thanks a lot for joining us, setting us up for baseball playoffs and tonight's Thursday night game. I like Goldfinger. Spy Who Loved Me is probably my favorite Bond movie. I loved Spy Who Loved Me. I think the guy had the awesomest villain lair ever. He had a shark pool that he could send people in through an elevator shaft. That's pretty sweet. Wake up call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, throwback Thursday 2001, the Braves win the NAL East for the 10th straight year. Only one World Series championship during that time. I always thought that was a point of contention for Braves fans. Just going, oh, God, such good teams. We only got one. But now, apparently, when we talked to our friend down in Atlanta one time, young kid, probably wasn't really affected by the 90s Braves losing in the World Series constantly. So, no, they're just happy to have that one. Yeah, sure. They were up 2-0 on the Yankees in 96. You don't think that one stung a little bit?
And you had arguably
happy to be there?
You had arguably the best pitching rotation in the history of baseball.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, four of those guys, we talked about earlier, three of them are in the Hall of Fame. And all three of them were no-brainers to make the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. They were fantastic. And only one in a decade?
Yeah.
A decade. You couldn't get two? Toronto got two. The Twins got... Braves lost to the Twins and the Blue Jays. Blue Jays then beat the Phillies in 93. No World Series in 94. Won the World Series, lost the World Series, and then lost again to the Yankees. Then who'd they lose to in the playoffs? It was Mets.
Mets, Padres.
Padres, yeah.
They had no business losing to the Padres.
No. Could have set up yet another Yankees, Braves,
yeah. Oh,
World
yeah,
Series.
Oh, yeah, and the Diamondbacks.
And the Diamondbacks in 2001. Diamondbacks. So, in Arizona, here they are. In the playoffs again, Arizona, going up against the Dodgers coming up. So we talked to Dave Preston about this. So tonight's game is Washington versus Chicago. So as mentioned earlier, is there a way to read Washington? All right, now, if you want to read the details of the games, yeah, that's probably the best way to do it. But wins, losses, this is about where they should be at 2-2. They played the Bills in the Philadelphia the last two games. They lost both of those. There's no shame in that. They beat Arizona and Denver. These are two teams probably at the bottom of the NFL. But I asked him, when I asked him about the feeling around the organization from fans and media and the city about Dan Snyder not being the owner of the team anymore. Remember, that's not something that's not a tangible thing. Like, you're not going to see it on the field, right? Like, a new owner it's not going to happen right away. The new owner might get a new coach. He might spend a little more on free agency, take a little bit of a risk here or there. Those are the things you see over time as that ownership group gets itself cemented within the organization. But how is it different? right? So how is it different when you are if you're a Washington Commanders fan and you go to the games, how do you feel differently that there's a new owner? When, again, you can't really sense it on the field. If Dan Snyder owned the team today, they'd likely be 2-2, right? They probably would be 2-2. Because Washington has never been one of those awful bottom of the basement first pick in the draft teams, but they're, you know, not quite good enough to be decent enough, right? 1 year they won the division when the division was lousy. Remember that a couple years ago? But like he said, the stadium looks cleaner. There's a different atmosphere within the organization, how they're dealing with the media.
Is the sun shining brighter and the birds are chirping?
Yeah, that might be it. But you know what it is, too? And don't underestimate this part. It's because you're looking for it. And I think that's the thing that, like, it's if you are working in Washington media, like Dave at WTOP or somebody at The Post or somebody on other radio stations or TV stations, you're kind of looking for it. Hey, for the last 20-plus years, we've been treated like this. Vague things, maybe not as open on certain things, whatever it is. Now, when I go down there on my weekly press conference trip, I am noticing a different feeling around the organization. They're asking me if I want extra time with so-and-so. Do I want a shoot with so-and-so? Like, maybe you're getting more detailed press releases. If you go in looking for those kind of changes, you'll find them.
Well, I mean, there's probably different energy with, you know, the front office people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not just talking about we're not talking about players here, but, you know, from the president to the GM to the secretary to the guy who just, you know, who figures out all the travel, the traveling for the team. They probably all have a different energy.
If you're a season ticket holder, you've probably noticed that ticket people are nicer. The concessions might be nicer. And it's not necessarily that you can sense it is a degree, but if you're looking for it, you will start noticing, hey, you know what? They're smiling a little more. Oh, yeah, they're a little pleasant. They're asking me how I'm doing. It looks cleaner. It looks like they're power washing the steps, right, during the week to make this place a little sharper. Like little things like
no
that.
No busted pipes.
Right?
Raining.
Exactly, right.
Whatever liquid down on me.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, so you are noticing those things. You know why? Because you want those things to exist. You want to feel like it's not just a new ownership taking over the money or just taking over a property. No, no, no. It trickles down to me. I have been coming here for 15 years or 20 years or whatever it is. And now I notice that something's different. Right. And that's what you're kind of looking for. I mean, I've said it. When it happened over the summer, I don't think we really, really overstate what a big deal this was for the NFL to have Dan Snyder out of this league. Even if you are a Charger fan, a 49er fan, a Seahawks fan, and you're nowhere near Washington, it was a absolute pariah on this league to have that guy owning the franchise. It was absolutely devastating to the integrity of whatever integrity it has based in your mind. Because some of you know the NFL doesn't have any. Some of you, it has a lot. But Dan Snyder being involved in any major league decision that they had ruined the process. Because he was very, very interested in Dan Snyder Incorporated, and that seemed to be about it. I've always said this about Jerry Jones. I know a lot of you don't like Jerry Jones, and I get it. I like Jerry Jones personally. I think he's entertaining. I don't think he's as good at being an executive as he is an owner, but I think he's the kind of owner that, because he's so media friendly, is the kind of transparency you like. When Jones doesn't like something, he has no problems telling people, right? When he has an opinion on something, he has no problem. And for us, that's great. But I do think that Jones cares about the Cowboys as well as care about the league. I think Jones sees the larger picture. And this is a guy that likes to separate his team from everything else. This is a guy that's made his own deals. When the league went one way, he went, nope, you know what? We'll make a deal with this soft drink company or this beer company, whatever. Merchandise. You guys can split all the merchandise. We'd rather not. But he still looks at the league and say, yeah, but I'm still part of something that I want to protect. I may disagree, and want to do what's beneficial to me, but I'm not going to throw the league under the bus. I never felt that way with Dan Snyder. I always felt that at any moment he could throw the nuclear bomb and blow up the league and say, you know what, guys, I know stuff you do not know. I've been in every meeting that is never, ever going to be public, and I will tell you all about it. I always felt that Dan Snyder was capable of that.
It was him against us, or like right. me against the world type exactly. mentality.
And I don't expect that from Jerry Jones. I think no matter how contentious a debate is within the walls of the NFL between the owners, I will trust, and I might be foolish, but I will trust that Jerry Jones will say, you know what? I could go scorched earth, but I'm not going to.
Listen, when,
and Dan Snyder, I never had that trust.
When Jerry Jones got into some of that legal trouble, right?
Right.
We didn't mention anything about him ever selling the team. When Robert Kraft got into that trouble, the massage right. parlors, never once suggested that he should sell the team. Daniel Snyder gets into, you know, like some front office squabble. We're like, please get out.
Get out.
Get out now.
Get out quickly. For the benefit of everybody, get out. Exactly. Now, here's the thing. Is that a, you know, look, should we know what's going on behind the scenes as NFL fans? Some of it, yes. Some of it's no, right? Look, can I be honest? I would love to be in a room when they talk about things that seem rather ordinary, like why are we doing onside kicks when we could do a 4th and 15? What's the argument against it?
Yeah.
Like, don't just come out of a room and say we voted against it. I'd love to know why. I'd love to hear these guys say, you know what? It's a little too quirky for me. It's a little too this. It creates this problem. It creates that problem. It's not really as effective as we think. Okay. But sometimes they make these decisions and you go, is that it? That's it? Like, it's over? Like, they just voted no and that's it? Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall and hear them discuss these things.
But
I do agree that there are things that's a private business.
No, that's what I was going to suggest. You don't want to know how the sausage is made.
No, you don't.
You don't. I mean, it's disgusting. It's icky. It's gross. It's, you know, there's probably a lot of things that go beyond behind the scenes that you're like, I don't really ever need to know that. Just give me the decent product.
For 20 years, when they had every single city dangle Los Angeles in front of their city council, I'm telling you, you absolutely do not want an owner going,
right.
You know what we said about this? You know what the strategical element was to this? We really were going to move Indianapolis again if they didn't give
yes.
us Lucas Oil Stadium.
Colts right? on the move once more.
Exactly.
Cardinals on the move once more.
Oh, and Steeler fans, if you thought we were that entrenched into Pittsburgh, you may not be so sure.
Oh, and like, you would never want to know that.
I mean, never
if that ever leaked,
right.
Steeler Nation, I mean, even the ones who don't live in Pittsburgh, hearts would be broken.
Right. If you ever found out, like when I was in Denver, that Pat Bowlen was, if you ever found out that Pat Bowlen had a plan to move out of Denver, you don't want to know that. You want to think of him fondly. And he probably didn't, but you never know. It's because you want those things protected in the room quietly. And Dan Snyder was the one guy that was always like, psh, boom.
Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, let's go back to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive Insurance. Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com. Going on Throwback Thursday 2001. Pat Donovan, WDAE, joins us. The Tampa Bay Rays are out. The Buccaneers are 3-1. He joins us from the great city of Tampa, St. Pete. How are you, my friend?
What the hell's going on here? Musburger is your main guy. I thought I was your main guy.
Well, you are our main guy. We call this buddy hour when we get our friends on the show to talk about things that are going on. Let's start with the Rays. First of all, this has become a joke to a lot of people in national media, the crowds in St. Petersburg for these games. Is there a reason behind it? We know they don't draw well during the regular season, but now people are starting. Even Sean McDonough is commenting on it. Why isn't that place full? Was it the afternoons? Is it the trop? What is it that doesn't draw people to that stadium?
Well, I think the easy answer is yes. It's a little bit of both of those things. Now, I was surprised that for two playoff games that they weren't sold out, because in the past they always have been sold out for playoff games. The 3 o'clock start obviously didn't help anybody. A lot of people, you know, you had 2 days in advance when you found out that they were going to play at 3 o'clock. So how many people from Sunday afternoon to Tuesday afternoon can get that Tuesday off? But yesterday, you know, it was not a whole lot better. You know, I think this is an area where we've got a lot going on, and there's not a lot of middle class in Tampa, right? Mm-hmm. There's when it comes to economics, there's some people that are really hurting and some people are doing really well. And I think for the people that are hurting, they looked at a team that, you know, was limping into the playoffs with a ton of injuries and probably didn't have a great chance, as we saw over the last couple of days. And I think a lot of people just decided that right now, for the little discretionary income that I might have, this probably isn't worth it. And I think that played into it as well. So I think all of those things did. But you know, when it comes to people joking about it, I'm used to that. I've been here long enough. It doesn't bother me anymore. It's always going to be part of the story here. We're always going to have a transient kind of fan base where a lot of the people who live here, including myself, right, are not from Tampa Bay. This is still a fairly new franchise, so they're still trying to build that kind of second generation of fans, and they're just not there yet.
Is it embarrassing for Major League Baseball, though? Is it something Major League Baseball should have said, we know this, let's put them on at night. Let's at least give it an opportunity to have people there. We can't have a national narrative of no one's going to Rays games in the playoffs in October.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. You wonder if they would have thought of that as far as putting it at night. But I don't necessarily think that they owe that to Tampa Bay either, right? Yeah. I think they have to do what's best for Major League Baseball. And if that's putting the Rays at 3 o'clock, that's putting the Rays at 3 o'clock. I think that while nationally, you know, there's a lot of discussion about this and people want to make jokes and all that kind of stuff, I think locally people understand what it is. Again, we're always going to have that kind of transient fan base. But also, if you look at TV ratings, if you look at radio ratings, the Rays are actually near the top of the league. So while the ballpark, an old, outdated ballpark that people can't wait to get into the new one, right? And by the way, they're going to redevelop that whole area, 86 acres down there. It's going to be a completely different city when the new ballpark is built. But as of right now, it is an old ballpark. And, you know, there's a lot of people that aren't going. But the fan base, it's bigger than people think. It's more passionate than people think. And again, if you look at the TV and radio numbers, they're there. They're near the top of the league in both.
So is the new stadium going to help? So is it more of a Tropicana Field problem? I've only been there a few times. I found the experience bizarre, having grown up in Boston and going to Fenway Park as a kid. But at the same time, I knew what it was. It's Florida. It needs to be covered, right? I know the rainstorms can come at any moment, and they're pretty heavy. So I got it. But a new stadium and a new area, revamped area, is it people saying, look, the drive and the experience isn't really great, but give me something else and I will cross the bridge and head on over there?
It will certainly impact, and not to mention just, you know, when we talk about that 86 acre redevelopment, much of that, well, not much of that, but plenty of that is also going to be residences, right? So there's going to be people living right there near the ballpark. The whole experience around the ballpark is going to be so much better. So it is going to impact attendance. That said, there's a reason why they're building a 30,000-seat ballpark.
Yeah.
This is an area that, like I said, we're always going to have diehard Red Sox fans and diehard Yankees fans and, like, people coming from all over the country that still care more about their team than the local team. That's always going to be part of what this is. But they understand that, you know, a 30,000-seat ballpark with a redeveloped area, they should fill up more of those seats. You know, I mentioned the TV and radio numbers before. Everyone looks at the Tampa Bay Lightning because they sell out every night, a 20,000-seat arena in Tampa where everyone lives, by the way, unlike St. Pete where a bunch of fish live. You know, people think, well, the Lightning are just vastly more popular than the Rays. The truth is, they're not even close to as popular as the Rays, but they got a small building that's downtown Tampa, so they sell out every night. So it looks like there's this huge passionate fan base. But, Tony, I can tell you, when I talk Lightning on the radio, crickets.
Absolutely.
But when we talk about the Rays, there's a reaction. And when they're on TV, when they're on the radio, they've got many more eyeballs and ears watching and listening than the Lightning ever have. But people see that sold-out building and think, hey, what a job they've done with hockey in Tampa Bay.
One more question on the Rays, then we'll get to the Buccaneers, who are 3-1. I find stadium, I'm one of those geeks, like, I like the political maneuverings. I get angry with stadiums being built and how city councils are manipulated, but I there's something about the devil in the details that I find fascinating. How did this become, let's revamp St. Petersburg and not let's find a place in Tampa.
Well, you know what the reality is, because it's two cities. And as much as those of us who are fans and live on either side of the bay may, you know, care about one thing or another, or, you know, love the other side of the bay, the reality is it's two cities and two governments. And the city of Tampa, you know, we're good friends on our show with one of the local county commissioners. And he told us just after the deal got done for St. Pete that the Tampa side of the bay, upfront money anyways, would have had about $200 million to put towards a new stadium versus $600 million that they're going to get in St. Pete towards a new stadium. And by the way, by staying in St. Pete, by staying on the Tropicana Field site, they get a portion of the money that comes in from that redeveloped area, that 86 acres of redevelopment. The Rays ownership is going to get part of that. So not only do they lose out on that money if they go from St. Pete to Tampa, which, by the way, I'm on the Tampa side. I wanted them in Tampa. I think they belong in Tampa. But the reality is Tampa was only going to get together about $200 million for a new ballpark, whereas they got three times that from St. Pete, and they'll get the redevelopment money. As a business, just from a business standpoint, it makes a ton of sense, even though from a baseball standpoint, it may not.
All right, let's get to the Buccaneers, 3-1. What do we need to know about this team, and what do we want to? How do we evaluate Baker Mayfield in four games?
Oh, so far, I love what's going on with Baker Mayfield, and I think that you could make an argument on why you should be really optimistic if you're a Buccaneer fan about the way that this season could go. On the flip side, are they going to win a Super Bowl under Todd Bowles and Baker Mayfield in 2023? No, absolutely not. But remember, Tony, and I know you do, a lot of people, Peter King, a lot of other people have the Buccaneers as one of the absolute worst teams in football this season. Yeah. There were people predicting 2 to 3 to 4 wins for the Buccaneers this season, and they have three going into their bye week already at 3-1, and they've really done some impressive things. You know, the New Orleans Saints offensively aren't exactly setting the world on fire this season, but at the same time, to hold any team in the NFL without a touchdown in today's NFL is pretty impressive. And then on the flip side, you know, you talk about Baker Mayfield and that Bucs offense, they're still figuring things out. And you can see it during the game that, especially in the run game, they're really still trying to figure things out offensively under this new system under Dave Canales. But despite the fact that they're still figuring it out, they are the first team to put up over 20 points or 20 points or more, I should say, against New Orleans since week 11 last season.
That's right.
So, but, you know, some really optimistic things on both sides of the ball. Do I think they're good enough to compete for a Super Bowl? No, but they're a lot better than people thought coming into the year.
Buccaneers have a bye week. They'll play Detroit. Both teams at 3-1 right now. Thank you, Pat. Always good talking to you at the last minute, too. Appreciate it, my man.
You got it anytime, Tony.
All right, man. Pat Donovan, WDAE, one of the good great stations around the country. Good stuff that he does, WDAE. On the Rays, again, eliminated in two games. Again, playing in front of sparse crowds. And the Buccaneers at 2-1. And listen, I wonder about this with Baker Mayfield because, yeah, there's a possibility, because the division is not great, that they might win enough to win the division. And how are we evaluating Mayfield? It's really wild what he was, then he wasn't. Then he was again, then he wasn't, then he was. It's this incredible, since he's gotten into the league, he's never rode the middle ground of, yeah, he's all right, he's good enough, he's all right. He's either leading the Browns to the playoffs, or he's getting released. He's either the number one guy in Carolina, or he stinks and we have to cut him. He's either coming in at the last minute and helping the Rams beat the Raiders on a short week, or he's now with the Buccaneers. Fighting for a job and now has the job in 3-1. This roller coaster has been intense.
You don't know how. Wake up call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Again, Throwback Thursday 2001. Braves win the division, beat the Marlins 20-3. 10th straight year on this date in 2001 that the Braves had won the NL East. Man, some of these songs, I'm like, if you had told me what year, I was like 2005, 6, 7, 2001. These are old songs now.
These are.
22 years is you know. I mean, think about it.
I could probably still sing this entire song.
Probably. It is wild. I have to say, it is wild. I have a brand new car, and I've been listening to 70s music.
Okay.
And it's like
was serious?
I like the 70s vibe. I was a little kid, so I'm not going to sit back and go, "Oh man, Paul Davis."
Not going to wax nostalgia, right?
Yeah, I'm not waxing nostalgia. I like when I hear like Stevie Wonder, Sir Duke. I wasn't like cognizant that it was out, right? But I like the music. I like the music of that era. But I sometimes have to pause and go, "Yeah, these songs are 50 years old." Like that blows me away. And so when we do Throwback Thursday for like 2001, I go, these songs are two decades old. All these songs that I'm familiar with that you easily would hear on the radio again. It's like too much. My brain can't handle all of this time warp disparity that's happening. So somebody invent the time machine really quick. I don't know if it ever was going to be invented, but yeah. We'll see.
Well, if it was invented, would we know by now?
I think so.
Like somebody would have came back, right?
Yeah, I always think so.
Those pictures always creep me out, though. Like, you know, it's like, here's an old picture of a guy holding an iPhone.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
No,
Photoshop, man.
I had an idea for a movie, but I didn't know how to finish it. I didn't even know how to plot it. But the premise would be of the movie was a bunch of archaeologists digging in an ancient ruin, and they come upon a room. And in the room is a box, and they open the box, and there's an iPhone inside. And they go, holy cow, how did this get here? And it leads them to a series of clues to finding the person that went back in time and left it there for them.
And the archaeologists knew it was an iPhone?
Yeah, well, yeah, they knew it was an iPhone because it was modern times. It was today. Right. And so what happened was the whole idea would have been, it obviously is a hoax. These guys are getting laughed at. They're being ridiculed. Somebody obviously planted it there. But these guys know it wasn't planted there. They know for sure that they dug it up. They know for sure it was in there. They don't know what to do with it. They're trying to get it to be turned back on so they could find out who it was. No one can do it. It's been there for thousands of years. And I didn't know where to go with it. But that time travel has always intrigued me because it's so complex. So... But yeah, but these Throwback Thursdays, they're like our own mini time machine.
They are.
Let's just do that.
And that time capsule. We open it up and go, look at this.
Exactly.
I remember this song.
So can Baker Mayfield win Comeback Player of the Year? Is there just not enough comebacking from that we have to?
Well, I mean, I guess.
It's not Alex Smith. He's like,
no.
He didn't almost die on the operating table.
I mean, honestly.
Or DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah, it's going to be DeMar Hamlin if he continues to play.
Like, what's the criteria? Do you have to have, like, a serious injury? Or can you stink and then bounce back and lead a team to the playoffs?
I think you could stink.
You can?
Right?
Is that part
dormant?
Of the criteria? Because, like we always talk about MVP, right? We always go, who's the MVP? And we always have this debate. Is it the best player on the best team? Or is it a guy that without him, they'd be picking first in the draft and they manage like a 10-7 record? We always have this argument about the MVP. In like the National League, it'll be Ronald Acuna Jr. likely. In the American League, it'll be Shohei Ohtani despite his injury.
All right. So, okay, here. Comeback player of the year.
Yeah, is there a criteria for this?
Well, you want to know who? Okay. I'll just tell you who won it last year.
Okay.
Do you know who won it last year?
No.
Geno Smith.
Geno Smith. Okay, so you can be a vagabond journeyman guy that nobody believes in, bounce and lead your team to the playoffs, and you can win comeback player of the year.
I think so, because I mean I'm looking at the previous ones. You know, before that was Joe Burrow, came back from an injury.
Came back from injury.
Alex
right?
Smith
came back from injury.
Ryan Tannehill, with Tennessee,
a resurrected career at Tennessee from a Dolphins disaster.
And
right, sure.
Andrew Luck before him.
Came back from injury.
Keenan Allen. I believe he came back from
injury. Don't remember, but he came back from injury.
I'm going to assume he came back from injury because guy always gets injured. Hopefully not this year. Knocking on wood.
All right, so Mayfield. So most of it is you.
Coming back from injury.
Something happened to you. You're out for almost the entire year. Something happened, and you bounced back and had a great season.
Yeah.
So Mayfield, again, as I was talking about just closing out that last segment. So Mayfield is the number one pick in the draft. What year? 2018,
uh-huh.
I think it was. So he's the number one pick in the draft. He's Cleveland's franchise quarterback. He leads them to the playoffs in a playoff win against the Steelers. Then suffers a shoulder injury, and they decide to go in another direction. So the roller coaster is falling down. Where does he land? He lands at Carolina. What did people say about him in training camp last summer? He's winning the battle over Sam Darnold. He looks good. They like him. Matt Rhule thinks he's special. I mean, there was everything positive you could say about Baker Mayfield's second act at Carolina in training camp. What happened? Wham, wham, stunk. It was terrible. And the roller coaster goes back downhill again. So then he's cut from the Panthers. And what does he do? He lands with the Rams. Oh, by the way, Matt Stafford's hurt. Do you mind starting for us in, like, I don't know, 10 minutes? Okay, I guess. Do you even have my uniform ready? Yeah, Mabel's stitching up your name on the back of it. She might get the name wrong, but what difference does it make, right? You don't care, right? Sure.
You spell
does
your
it even
name.
Fit? I don't even know. She's putting the stitches together. It might not even fit. It might be two sizes too big.
So Field is F-E-I-L-D, right?
Right, yeah, I guess, right? Yeah, we're putting it together. But if it doesn't fit, who cares? If you can just be out on the field like now, that would be great. And what does he do? He leads them from a come-from-behind victory and beats the Raiders. He had gotten there 10 seconds ago. And so now what was happening? It goes back up again. But then it comes down to earth with some not-so-great performances, and then he ends up in the offseason looking for a new home. Where does he end up? Tampa. But now it's like, oh, can you beat Kyle Trask and whoever else was there for the job? I don't know. Kenny? Okay. Now, you know what? He wins the starting job. Now he's 3-1, and people are praising him nationally for his performance. The roller coaster is going back up the hill again. So all of that stuff that I mentioned last year, being QB1 at Carolina with all this optimism that was coming out of August, to, yeah, you're gone, to, can you come into the last minute and help us win a game? Yes. Is that enough? If he wins this division, even with an okay record, is that enough to put him in the category of comeback player of the year? Not if DeMar Hamlin has a great season.
Yeah.
Like, if DeMar Hamlin even makes a tackle, he should be comeback player of the year.
Yeah, I don't even think DeMar Hamlin needs to have a great season. He just needs to be on the field more. Yeah. I mean, he played in his first game last weekend.
He played in his first game.
I think that's it, right?
I think that's it. You're right. I think that award is done now.
Yeah, move on to the next.
Like, I think it would be hard to be nearly died and came back and played
on
in
the
NFL
field
game.
On the field on a primetime game that everyone saw.
That's right. And don't forget, Whopper, 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 Whopper. Don't ever forget that, kids. Greatest television ad placement in the history of sports.
Oh, gosh.
Whenever I want to laugh, I go back to that video.
Yep.
Whenever I'm feeling blue,
Joe Bucks and y'all
need a laugh.
We really don't know what's going on. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. Whopper, 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 Whopper. It makes me laugh every time I see it. Such a great video. But playing in a game after nearly dying, I think he's got it wrapped up.
Yeah. But if we take DeMar Hamlin out of the equation.
Right. Could Baker Mayfield?
Is there a way for Baker to get it from him if Baker continues on this trend? What if the Buccaneers win this division going away?
And they could win this division going away.
Yes, it's a terrible division.
It's not a good division at all. Like, they're already talking in Atlanta that Desmond Ritter shouldn't play anymore. That Taylor Heinicke is good enough to win games for you because he actually was a starter somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right? Carolina's terrible. They're not going anywhere.
They're fine with that.
The Saints have a top 10 defense. Pat Donovan's right. The Saints don't give up a lot of points. Haven't for a long time. Going back to last season. They're great defensively.
But they're a weird team.
They're a weird team.
I mean, they have all the right pieces.
And I can't stress this enough. Couldn't care less about Derek Carr. And I don't hate him. Just don't think his story is that big.
Yeah.
Just don't think his story is that awesome. And the Buccaneers could absolutely win this thing. Now, if Mike Evans is out for a good period of time, tweaked his hamstring, they're on a bye week. It might help them when they go back to play Detroit in 2 weeks. But a week, I should say, since we're already close to the weekend. But yeah, maybe I'll start a little comeback player of the year campaign for Baker Mayfield.
Hey, it's happened before. Like I said, I mean, you know, Geno Smith got it last year. Well deserved, but he wasn't fighting. He wasn't coming back from injury. Right. He was coming back from obscurity.
That's different. Obscurity is different than stinking, right? All right. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio on a Throwback Thursday.